What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
It is National Day of Protest to Stop Police Brutality. The day originated in 1996 with the October 22nd Coalition. It is an annual day of action to protest police terror, state repression, and the criminalization of a generation. It's been observed by activists and organizers across the United States every year since its inception. It was chosen in 1996, the date, so to have students back in school and before elections to provide a platform for folks to express themselves in the streets. The October 22nd Coalition was formed by a diverse group of organizations and individuals concerned about state terror and established to create a powerful, visible national protest to demand accountability for police actions and raise awareness of issues like police budgets, the criminalization of protests, and state repression. Here on LND, we're going to spend the hour talking to organizations and families who have committed their lives to ending state violence. Our first guest is Dr. Melina Abdullah, professor and chair of Pan-African Studies at Cal State Los Angeles, as well as the co-founder of Los Angeles Chapter of Black Lives Matter and co-founder of Black Lives Matter Grassroots. As far as I'm concerned, the most important introduction is she's my friend, sister, and comrade. Good morning, Dr. Abdullah. You're muted, baby.
So glad I get to start my day with you, Sister Kat. Thank you for having me.
Listen, I got to get you where I can. And this is usually how I could get you. So we're talking about the business. But I'm going to see you soon. Prayerfully,
I'll see you soon. We're actually already out here in Memphis. So I'm here with organizers from Black Lives Matter Grassroots Memphis, Black Lives Matter Grassroots Atlanta, and New Orleans. We're all here in Memphis for a day of action for our National Day of Action Against Police Brutality. And BLM grassroots chapters around the country are doing actions in LA and Birmingham and in Phoenix. And again, several chapters are here in Memphis right now.
Now, I'm going to jump to exit. I wish I'd known. Wherever you are, I want to be. So just know that. Just let me know. This is where I'm going. Come on. I'm going to jump down to where I was going to go later. And that is for folks who still may not understand and believe there are still folks, which surprises me, but I guess I'm mired in it. So, you know, I got tunnel vision when it comes to you and the work. The difference between BLM Global and BLM Grassroots. And then we get in work.
So when people think of Black Lives Matter in its truest sense, that's what Black Lives Matter Grassroots is. In fact, my t-shirt says Black Lives Matter Grassroots is Black Lives Matter. We are just regular people, mamas and families of those who are killed by the police and workers who believe in making Black Lives Matter. So Black Lives Matter Grassroots is the movement on the ground. We are 52 chapters all around the world. That's the largest Black Lives Matter has ever been. And the others, the frauds, if you're following BLK Lives Matter, that's the fraud account. Those are highly paid consultants who stole the resources that poured in to fund the work. They stole that resource, those resources, and pocketed it. And also are using it for essentially PR campaigns without doing any real work. So Black Lives Matter Grassroots is the work on the ground and the true form of Black Lives Matter.
And I address that every time you're on the air, because you know how I'm about setting the record straight, but also people need to, that this work is happening. It's happening across the country, and I believe Sweden. There's a chance.
Sweden just got back from Sweden last week. Yes.
Every time I say that, they're like, there's Black people in Sweden, Melina, there's Black people in Sweden.
Man, according to my survey, it was all Black in Sweden because I was with every Black person in Sweden. But it's about 2% Black. Black Lives Matter Grassroots is the largest Black organization in the entire nation. And you have political leaders that are part of BLM Grassroots. One of the members of parliament, the only Black member of parliament, or one of the Black members of parliament, is a member of BLM Grassroots. But it's led brilliantly by this sister named Aisha Jones, who's born and raised in Sweden, born and raised in Stockholm, whose family comes from the Gambia. And they're doing really, really important work, especially around Black women, around policy, where Sweden is trying to say if you protest, they can deport you. And so they're pushing back against all of those things. And it was great to see. So we are very large now, 51 chapters in the state, a 52nd chapter in Sweden, and we continue to grow.
And so when you think about the work of Black Lives Matter now, I mean, I know there are individual cases, Black Lives Matter grassroots, I know there are individual cases, but when you as leadership are thinking about the role for your organization in this moment, spread out across the country, having conversations across the globe, what is it? Where are you headed? Where are we going?
Well, I think we're doubling down on who we are. And with the passing of Mama Asada, I think we're reminded that we have to be revolutionaries. We, this moment, when it's unfettered fascism, right, plaguing not just this country, but the globe, unfettered fascism does not mean capitulating. It doesn't mean saying, well, we're liberal. It means saying that we are revolutionaries and everything needs to change. And on today, the National Day Against Police Brutality, as I stand here with the parents of Glenn Foster Jr., who were killed by, who was the football player killed by police in Alabama. I'm here with Ashley McKenzie, the mother of Jalen McKenzie, who was killed right here in Memphis. I'm here with Jacob Blake. I'm here with the family of Breonna Taylor. As we stand here, we know that it's not enough to say, you know, this city has a Black chief of police. We're not trying to diversify the ops, right? We're trying to say that it's important to demand real public safety, which, as you know, and your work speaks to, comes from empowering communities and resourcing communities, not tinkering around the edges of a system that descends from slave catching. And so this moment means Black Lives Matter grassroots has to double down on who we are as revolutionaries, and everybody needs to be organizing, organize, organize, organize against ICE, against genocide that's still happening, and against the system of policing that's meant to put us down.
I know you saw it because you liked it. I put a post up two or three days ago. I was so annoyed by, I mean, I called it dribble, and people tell me I got to be nicer, but I put my post up, organizers, shut up. Right. And it really was a call to action. I don't really want people to shut up. I do want them to shut up whining and criticizing without action. Right. I have an analysis about the politics of no kings. I do. Right. Like, people are waving American flags. And what I've been saying is, like, people want, a lot of those folks want the America of Obama and Biden. Right. But that means, but they also, those folks that are in the streets right now under a fascist government, right, knowing that their pictures are being taken and they're being put on files, they may not understand what that means, but they know that they are resisting repression. Those are the people we need to politicize and pull into the movement, not ostracize because we're talking mess about them on the Facebook.
Right. That's right. So we made a decision a while ago in 2016. We were invited to speak at the Women's March, which is another one of these, you know, liberal marches. And a lot of our radical friends said, don't go. And we made a decision. I think I talked with you in advance of the decision. No, we're going to go. This is hundreds of thousands of people. We're going to go and we're going to put out our ideas.
That's right.
And so maybe we can turn some of these people out. And so that's what we do. And so we were at No Kings. And, you know, when we were at No Kings, there were some people who were really mad at me when I said, I know your rules say don't cuss, but F that, right? And F the police. Some people were mad about it, but there were others who were energized by it. And that's who we're there for. So I feel like in some ways, and Amanda Seales has talked about like the difference between a rally and a protest. I think her analysis on that is right on. And it doesn't mean that a parade is not the enemy of a protest.
That's right.
Can you go to the parade and then pull those folks who think they came to watch a parade into the real protest work? And that's the position that we've taken.
That's called organizing, right?
Right.
And or there's no other option. All right, there's something going on. I when I tell you, no less than five people in 10 days have said Amanda Seales' name to me. She must be really big. I mean, it's coming out of your mouth too. So something is happening there, and I hope to connect with that sister soon. Melina, one of the things that I really appreciate that you've done with Black Lives Matter grassroots is intentionally connect with, educate, inform, and organize, if you will, Black media. Can you talk about that? the intentional communication strategy, which often organizers forget about?
Sure. Well, we know that Black media, you know, there's an African proverb that until the lion tells the story, the hunter will always be the hero. And so without Black media, our story is being told from the perspective of the hunter. We need our story told from the perspective of the lion. You've been a lion for a very long time, Kat, right? That we need to, you know, make sure that we are ensuring that our lions have the story, and that we need to remember Black media is often muted, and we have to uplift Black media, but we also have to encourage Black media to not kind of, you know, as we encourage everybody else, to continue to be lions, right? Not to be lions who want to dress up in hunter's clothing, right? We need you to continue to be our lions. And then we, as also consumers of media, need to look for the lions who are telling the story. So, you know, maybe an assignment for today is to tell everybody to listen to Law and Disorder, right? To tell people every minute you spend watching mainstream media, you need to spend double that, you know, using independent and Black media. And so we've been doing a lot of work to make sure that we talk with and support Black media, including having our own show on KBLA, including I'm now a columnist
for the
LA Sentinel. Yeah, in fact, the piece that comes out tomorrow is called Of Parades and Protests, right? So it's a conversation about the No King's Day demonstrations and how we turn it into protest. And so Black media is hugely important. Never would a white platform invite me to be a columnist, right?
And shout out to Los Angeles Sentinel. When I, you know, my first job in the movement was as a communication person at Community Coalition, and the Los Angeles Sentinel was one of the only public, the Sentinel and the Wave. I don't even know if the Wave still exists.
Wave is still around.
Right. The Sentinel and the Wave, they were the only two papers for a long time that would talk to me, and they let me keep my job because I got stories placed, but only there. So I'm excited that your voice is there.
Me too. And let me just uplift, since I'm in Memphis, there's a long history of it too, right? Organizing and Black journalism, Black media have always gone hand in hand. So we remember that Mama Ida B. Wells started the Memphis Free Speech and Headlight. And I'm in Memphis, so I feel like Mama Ida B. Wells wanted me to say her name as we talk about courageous journalist organizers that I know you're in the vein of, Sister Kat. So maybe she wanted me to remind her that she got your back right now.
That just made my eyes well up. I went on vacation. People always say, what do you mean you went on vacation? But I went on vacation to Holly Springs, Mississippi, and they've got a museum there dedicated to her. So it's a little bitty spot. But yeah, I do invoke her name often. All right, Sister Melina, I know you got lots to do today. I appreciate you. I love you. Thank you for taking time and being on.
I love you too.
The show.
Thank you.
All right.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right, sis. Peace. All right, y'all, that was the voice, for those of you who are watching us on the YouTube, the face of Dr. Melina Abdullah, professor and chair of Pan-African Studies at Cal State Los Angeles, as well as the co-founder of the Los Angeles chapter of Black Lives Matter and co-founder of Black Lives Matter Grassroots. She came to us live from Memphis, where several of the 53 chapters of Black Lives Matter Grassroots have gathered for National Stop Police Brutality Day. That takes us to 8:21 in the morning here on Law and Disorder. I am your host, Kat Brooks. On August 18th, 2023, brothers Taman and Tommy Wilson were driving in a vehicle when three Martinez police officers profiled, targeted, and shot into their car, leaving one brother dead and the other scarred with lifelong trauma. Joining us to discuss is our leader, Nance Taman Wilson's mother. And I see you have somebody else with you, ma'am. Good morning. You got to come off mute, sis.
Good morning, Kat. This is me and Thomas.
Hi, Thomas.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us. So I know this is the first time that we've talked on the air, so what I want you to know is this is your time. You can take your time, take as much breath as you need, only answer what you feel like answering and talking about what you feel like talking about, okay? This is no different than when you're with APTP. We're just on the air so that we can get the story out into the world. I do a segment on the show called the State Terror Roundup, where on Thursdays I profile different cases of state violence across the country. And I did this. I went back in my notes and I had done a segment on this about a year ago. So I don't know if Mom wants to talk or if Tommy wants to talk, but if somebody would walk us through what happened in August of
2023.
You know, officers essentially arrived on a call, and when officers arrived, they had arrived already with the intent to come with as much violence as they possibly can. They got out their cars screaming and yelling absurdities and throwing stuff at the car, like throwing batons at the car. Now, we were inside the car, and when the police came, as they were yelling and throwing stuff at the car, it was very startling how everything like just happened with police pulling up and throwing stuff at a car. And as already when they first pulled up, just throwing batons and things at a car, we already was frightened. And we did not want to lose our lives in a situation like this. So as we drove away opposite direction of the police, they got out their vehicles and drew their weapons and shot into the car as we drove away. And I was sitting directly behind my brother, and I was hit 2 times in my back, and he was hit above his collarbone 2 times. And I wasn't driving. My brother was driving. The vehicle crashed. My brother, he lost consciousness as soon as he was shot. I was still conscious. The car crashed. We were going like a low speed, so it wasn't a bad crash. But the car crashed, and when the officers came to the vehicle, I was compliant. I had my hands in the air. I let them know. I was verbally letting them know that, you know, we're injured. We're shot inside this vehicle. We need assistance. We're no threat. My brother was unconscious at the time. They kind of calmed down. They said, okay, we're going to get you out of the car. It was one officer said that. He got me out of the car. I came out with my hands up through the window. Got handcuffed immediately. From there, the officer arrived on scene who was not there in the original shooting. And as the officer was trying to carry me back away from the car while I'm handcuffed with my hands behind my back, he was dragging my shoulder. This officer came and he escalated even further. He grabbed my other side of my arm and he started kneeing me in my face multiple times. Kneed me in my face probably 3 times, and I had said it as soon as he did it. It was right in the open. As soon as he did it, I'm like, he's kneeing me in my face. I'm handcuffed. And he continued to do it, and they laid me down, and they didn't believe I was shot. They said I was lying. They didn't believe that I got shot 2 times in my back. But, yeah, my brother, he did not make it. He passed away. He was killed by the Martinez Police Department. And the same officer that kneed me in my face 3 times, he said that he didn't know I was handcuffed and that it was too much going on for him to assess the situation, that he didn't know I was handcuffed while he was dragging me from my cuffs. So, your mic's muted.
Thank you. I'm so sorry, Tommy, and I'm so sorry. I let it for your loss and ongoing trauma. I'm going to name the officers involved in the incident because we do here, we name names. Cole Bennett, Mark Cahue, Raul Ceja Mendez, and Alexander Torona.
So there would have been a fifth officer, the one who wasn't on the scene that came up and abused and assaulted him verbally and physically.
Yeah, anything taunted me while I was, you know, I'm pretty distraught. Lost my brother right in front of my eyes. I was saying it out loud. I lost my brother, and he said the normal fascist games.
Play
stupid games, win stupid prizes, right?
His name was Gianni Arone, and he was fired just for that specific, the brutalizing me while I was handcuffed. There's no, you know, there's no excuse for hitting somebody while they're handcuffed.
I put that in the state chair run-up that I did, that he said, play stupid games, win stupid prizes, and said, the chief said, taunting a person who had just been shot by police handcuffed was disgraceful conduct.
Mm-hmm.
So three of those cops were fired. Our letter, what is the pathway now for you? We don't, as you know, on APT, we don't call it justice, because the only justice would be Tommy to not be walking with this trauma and Taimon to be back at your dinner table. So what is the pathway right now for your family, for accountability, to try to heal, and the role that you're playing in this movement to end state violence?
Well, it's very, very hard for our family, because Taimon was a core member of our family. He was basically everybody's favorite. He hasn't been out in life hurting nobody or doing nothing to nobody. He's young. He was finding his way like we all do. He left a son that we had no idea. His girlfriend was even pregnant at the time. So he has a junior. The officers are lying. They lied and swore in statements. I feel like going forward, the DOJ doing their report, I believe when it all boils down to it, they're going to feel a part of them, because they did a lot of criminal stuff, but they'll make a lot of stuff they do that's criminal, they say is policy and procedure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they get away with doing a lot of things. Oh, that was just against policy, or that was procedure for them to do that, but it was wrong on every level.
It's illegal to shoot into
a moving vehicle, and I help pass that policy.
Yeah, illegal to shoot in moving cars. They made a statement in their sworn statements that the passenger in the car pointed a gun at them, and they felt like their life was in danger. That's the statement they made. No one was ever in the front seat. You couldn't even see in the front seat because the windows were tinted beyond the legality of being able to see.
Officers claimed that I was in the front seat of the car, in the passenger seat. I was never in a passenger seat of the vehicle.
And all the evidence shows the bullet trajectory coming in the car. And even the DOJ examiner was like, how can you see? You can see in the car from that far away. That's why the officer had the flashlight trying to see, because they couldn't see. But all of them, all of a sudden, seen, they scared. They thought they were in a shootout with them with the windows up. You know, it's just lie after lie that they're telling, but they keep making a point like they were afraid for their lives, but it was never the case. They just lied a lot.
Lies and inconsistencies. I was shot in my spine through the trunk of the car. I was never
from the back, never in the back front
of the car,
seat.
In the trunk of the car, and for all the officers to come up with this.
All of them saying, oh, he was in the front seat, and If he was in the front seat and pointed a gun at him, don't you think the charges would be a little different?
Yeah, I never received any charges from that.
No-brainer of the case. Guys are all saying he pointed a gun, your life was in danger. If that was the truth, why didn't you guys book him for, you know, attempt? They didn't get that story till after the fact.
Which is what they're trained to do. They're literally trained by the police associations. They call them unions, but cops aren't labor, so I won't call them that. Mm-hmm. To do that, I've got to move on to our next guest. I'm trying to get as many families in crammed into this hour as possible, but I want to thank you both for coming on. We're with you, right, for life. Mama Dion, whom I taught you next, can testify to that. And I'm sending you all lots of love on today.
Thank you. No police brutality day.
Power of the people, y'all take it easy. You can log off at your convenience. We've been speaking to Arletta Nance and Tommy Wilson, Tamon Wilson. Arletta is Tamon Wilson's brother and mother, and Tommy Wilson is his brother. That takes us to 8:34 in the morning here on Law and Disorder. I am your host, Cab Brooks, and we're moving on now to the story of 16-year-old James Rivera, who was murdered by the Stockton Police Department on July 22nd, 2010. We're joined by his mother, Dion Smith Downs, who ever since, Mama Dion, when I was looking at your name on my run sheet, I had this flash of memory, and I don't know where we were, but we were in Oakland, and we were outside, and you had your poster board that you used to carry of your son, and I just see you so vividly in my head. It's 2025. You have been in the streets for 15 years, demanding not only justice for your baby, but I'm getting emotional talking and saying it. Not just justice for your baby, but also all babies, right? Like, I've got so many pictures of you sitting next to other family members at protests, at court dates. Now you're working with the family of Rocco Robinson. We may or may not be joined by them this morning. Rocco was murdered in Stockton September 9th, 2025. But today, Mama Dion, is National Stop Police Brutality Protest Day. I think I keep saying it in the wrong order, but y'all know what I mean. 15 years, Mama Dion, 15 years and of being in the streets, of fighting, the court dates, of healing portals, of family meetings, right? And we'll keep on, but I just wonder what you reflect on today when you're thinking about it's been 15 years and you were literally in the midst of another case of a young man who was shot in his back by the Stockton Police Department and know it was going to be an uphill battle.
Yes. Like I had met the family, I had got a phone call. And soon I got the phone call, they told me to get to a certain part of Stockton. And I went there and I see the people all in rage. And it brought back memories the day that I drove up to see my son laying on the ground when he'd been shot with law enforcement. Only thing different from my case and their case, they already had him, they picked him up, put him in an ambulance and took him to the hospital where they pronounced him deceased. And when I went into the hospital, the first thing I remember is like it was just yesterday for my son. But I stand in solidarity with the family and I let them know that I'm here to support them. And I also would make it clear to them that it's okay to be mad. And I also say, I want to teach you to learn your fight.
That's right.
And, you know, and I think that's very important that the family know they fight and, you know, and they strength. And so like what I told them, I'm here for the long haul. I'm not looking for fame. I'm not looking for well done, you know, because my well done is when I educate you to go and fight a good fight, you know.
And that is the beauty. I'm just going to say it. That's the beauty of the legacy of APTP families. I watch y'all all over the state, all over the country, taking what you've learned, your lesson, and supporting other family members. Yesterday, there was a rally and press event outside the Stockton City Council meeting demanding transparency, release of the footage of the murder, and accountability. How did yesterday go?
Well, we had went to the police department at 3 o'clock. I got there a little late, but they had it closed down. And then they had a message that I guess we was coming, and they closed the city hall down at 3 o'clock.
Congratulations.
So So what we did, we did not let that stop us. We did a little walk. It's about 30 of us. We walked from the police department all the way to the city hall and demand what we asked for. And then we also was trying to serve them the complaint. Mm-hmm. So we're going to organize for November next month for the next city hall meeting to address the issue that they didn't take care yesterday.
Okay. And so the call to action then would be for folks that are able to come to next month's city council meeting. Can you talk, and yeah, we'll put that out. We'll put that out on the archives of the show and, of course, across APTP. What message do you have for the masses about the state of police violence in the country today, 15 years after your son was murdered?
It's hard, but we can't give up. We have to believe in our high God or whatever your religion is and stay focused. And don't let nobody take you off your beat, because in this fight, I almost got took off my beat, because after I'm out here fighting for justice, because I didn't know I had to be in the streets. And I'm glad I was in the street, because I learned a lot by being in the street. And not only dealing with police brutality, I was able to be blessed to deal with my own children. I was able to be able to deal with our community on all type of levels. But, you know, I didn't even know my own self needed counseling, and, you know, to even cry out, talk out. And I also lost a lot of death, community violence in 2016. My mother passed in 2014. In 2021, my brother got hit by a train. So I can sense the being around death. Then I just lost my brother-in-law. I'm burying him this Saturday in L.A. So I have to be leaving here to get to L.A. So that's what I tell people, that, you know, no matter how the struggle look, maybe we don't get to support the proper support that we have, but when we believe in us, keep going. It's going to be always going to be a no, but don't let that no be your stopping block. Keep going. Keep going. Pray. Keep going. And guess what? You're going to find your way, because God ain't going to leave us or forsake us.
My dear, you're an inspiration to me and so many other people. Thank you for taking time to be on the show today. Safe travels to LA, and I'll see you soon.
Okay, and also, too, I want to thank APTP. Thank y'all for supporting us with our families. Thank y'all for the People House. And thank y'all for being in our lives, because I don't know what we'd be doing if we didn't have y'all organization. And I mean, y'all is a real organization. Y'all really deal with family on different levels. And I appreciate that, Kat. And I love you. And keep up the good work. And like I always say, I'm here.
I love you. We love you for life. And I'm here.
Yeah.
All right, Mama Dion. To stop now, you're gonna make me cry on the air. Go on.
Okay.
All right. Peace. That takes us to 8:41 in the morning. Let me gather myself together, because this next brother makes me cry all the time too. Jacob Harris, 19 years old, was murdered by the Phoenix Police Department. His friends were convicted of his murder and sent to prison, three of them. Jacob's father, Roland Harris, is with us now for updates on his fight for accountability. Remember, we don't say justice, because justice would be Jacob at home with his father and those three babies released, actually never having had to endure the horrors of prison. Good morning, Roland. You on mute, baby.
Hello.
It's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a minute, but the work, you know, I'm updated on the work when you first came on the show with Meg O'Connor, I wouldn't even hear. I was in Point Reyes, and you told your story. It was another time that I cried on the air about what happened to your son and what happened to those three kids. And you said at that time that you had been fighting your fight alone. There was a commitment made that was over. And when I look at now the coalition that you have built, I got to shout out Rafael Way too, right? Our organizing director, because she'd be about that business. It is one of the most beautiful stories in the darkness of this story and what happened to Jacob and his friends. It is a light in the movement, what you all have done in Phoenix. And I just wonder if you want to share a little bit about what the journey has been. From the first time we spoke, which I, shoot, I almost cussed, 3 years ago, I think, to now.
It's still a fight, But I feel like we're gaining ground now. And the coalition, everything. I mean, those women are some very powerful, awesome women that are in this coalition. But we're making a lot of headway. I mean, we got the post-conviction release granted for Jacob's friends. Johnny, who was the 14-year-old at the time, he has a hearing coming up here on the 6th. We're hoping that the Maricopa County Attorney's Office just lets him go, rather than probation or something of that nature. But, I mean, he's been in there for 7 years. My question is going to be to that Maricopa County Attorney's Office is what more rehabilitation can 7 more years of putting him in prison or making him stay in prison for 7 more years going to change? But that is a great fight to carry on Jacob's legacy and his love and help that he had for youth around here. I did start a nonprofit foundation in his honor called the Jacob Michael Harris Foundation. A lot of the fight that we've been fighting with the city of Phoenix to put funding into youth prevention and crime prevention has paid off a little bit. I mean, they gave us some chump change to try to save these kids, but I mean, every little step towards the right direction is better, you know. I just don't want Jacob's death to be for nothing. And so far, to actually woke me up to be an activist now and to protect our black children in the city because they don't have it. So we're going to make sure that we got this protection going. And I think the city's done finally woke up and realized we're not going anywhere. We did have a big change out here on the city council as well. Anna Hernandez, District 7, she actually won the seat for the city of Phoenix City Council, and she's... Her brother was actually murdered by Phoenix PD a few months after Jacob.
Yeah.
So there's some powerful changes going on out here in Phoenix. And like I said, I can't express my gratitude enough towards you, Kat, for standing by and really being a woman of your word and making sure that I won't go through this journey anymore by myself. And I haven't been. I just can't thank you enough for that.
You don't owe me no thanks to watch what's happening out there. And it's, you know, Roland, it's sort of amazing because, you know, we do this work in a lot of cities and I'm in communication with a lot of folks. Well, actually, Phoenix is the one city we're like outside of California where we're doing this work because it was just important. But I'm watching rollbacks. And in every other city that I do this work or I go talking or whatever, my comrades are doing work, there's rollbacks. But in Phoenix, you all just keep trudging forward. In Maricopa County, no less, where I'll remind folks, was that dude Joe, the sheriff, like one of the most brutal sheriffs in the history of sheriffs ever, a racist, violent police department, scandal, corruption, you name it. And the organizing you all are doing is pushing justice forward in a time of extreme repression. And it's amazing to me. I can't help but believe that the ancestors and God got their hands on y'all.
It's definitely a higher power around us. And that's one thing that's so awesome. When I hear Billy Way say that, like, this is one of the most strongest coalitions she's ever been part of. And we've been together for, God, 3 years now almost. it's amazing on the work that we've gotten done in such a short amount of time. It really is a testament that if black people stand together, we can make change. And that's what folks need to realize. If we stand together and we fight, they have to recognize us. They have to make the changes when they realize we're not going anywhere. And I think that's what the city of Phoenix is starting to realize, is that this coalition, we're not going anywhere. It's amazing that when people say, oh man, how'd your coalition get so much tread? How'd you guys get so powerful out here? And It's a testament to everyone, because everyone in this coalition is humble. No one wants to be the face of the coalition. No one organization wants to be the face of this coalition. We're just black folks that care about black children standing together and going to do whatever we got to do to protect the black children. And we don't care if we get the praise or we don't care if we get the glory for it. We just want to do the work and make sure that it's done. And that's what folks need to realize, is that that's all that matters. At the end of the day is what the results is. Who cares who gets the credit? And I think that's why our coalition is the way that we are.
Roland Harris, thank you. I see you in transit, you moving, you always moving. I want to thank you for taking time out to holler at me this morning. I'm sending you so much love, my brother, so much.
I love you too. Thank you.
All right. Peace. That is the father of Jacob Harris. His name is Roland Harris. Roland Harris. Jacob was murdered by the Phoenix Police Department, and his three friends were sent to prison for his murder. The coalition out there went from nothing, no one, to multiple organizations, organizers, advocates, elected officials, community members, forming a coalition that has just fought and fought and fought. To raise awareness about the violence of the Phoenix Police Department, to secure a hearing for a new trial or release for one of the young people who was just 14 years old when he was sent into a prison. I wanted to end with that segment because organizing gets the goods. As scary, as horrible, as violent, as vile, as horrific as the situation may be, as these political times are, my loves, organizing is the answer. Unity is the answer. When Roland said no one in that coalition cares about being the face or getting the glory, that is part of why it's been so successful, right? Our movement was privatized, celebritized, and monetized. That's part of the problem. That's part of why Trump is in office right now, because people were so busy trying to get on the cover of magazines and be the face in the media that they forgot about doing the actual work, which is organizing. And that's the unsexy stuff. That's the stuff that most media shows, you know, except for this one, don't cover, right? The late nights and the cold pizza and the door knocking and the aching fingers and the making the flyers and the facing the death threats and the intimidation. Like, that's how we get to where it is that we're going. And Phoenix is an amazing example of that. All right, y'all. Find a stop police brutality action in your community and support it in a way that you choose.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.